Happy Monday, Tappers. It is January 22nd, and the Daily Tap is live. And instead of it being a disappointing and dejecting podcast, it is going to be an enjoyable one, with the Minnesota Vikings losing badly, 38-7 by the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll talk about that, as well as the Patriots going back to the Super Bowl once again, to no one's maybe some surprise, but I think a lot of people thought the Jags could give them a fight. It kind of played out how it would. We'll talk about that. And then we'll also talk about what's going on with the Milwaukee Brewers. So you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SnowTapWI, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play. So that is something that we're happy to announce today, that we are now on Google Play. So for all of my Android friends, for all my ones who are rocking the Samsungs, you can now download us on Google Play. And the people who still are part of the iPhone gang, you can still do it on iTunes. So and hey, maybe you want to subscribe in both places. Maybe you just want to be about the team. I'd appreciate that. So that's where you can get it. Hopefully a couple more that we're going to drop in the next coming weeks, so you guys can get Snow Tap literally anywhere you want. So glad to hear you guys are enjoying it. We're having a lot of fun with it. We hope that we keep the ball rolling for you guys and having good podcasts, good content each day. Let's start with the Philadelphia massacre of the Minnesota Vikings. And how sweet was it? The Vikings fans came in all cocky. They thought they were going to win this game. They thought they were going to bring it home. They had the skull chant on the Rocky statue, on the Rocky stairs. Then they put the Vikings gear on the Rocky statue, and they just got their asses handed to them by the Philadelphia Eagles and Big Dick Nick Foles. It was a fantastic watch. It was like a fine wine. It's like we busted into LeBron Vino and just gave us a little sheesh, and then enjoyed it the entire time, just sipping all night long, man. That was such an awesome win. And just as much as last week killed as a Packer fan cheering on the Saints, this one felt just as good as a Packer fan cheering on the Eagles. Seeing the Vikings get absolutely embarrassed and destroyed was fantastic and wonderful, and I would do it all over again. I'd have the exact same thing happen. This was sweet, and the fact that they have now all these Philly assholes who've trolled them for the whole day coming into their city for the Super Bowl makes it so much better, because all these Philly dudes are going to do is talk shit the entire week. It's awesome. It is so good. It is so rich that these people got all cocky, thinking that Nick Foles, no way could they lose. No way their precious Vikings could actually lose. And once again, the Vikings let a team down in disappointment. It is the annual thing. Just when you think they could turn the corner, they find a way to gut punch you. So after all this bluster, all this excitement, the Vikings score on the first drive. And I think if you're a Vikings fan, you're like, oh my God, this might happen. This might be a thing. And then interception return, Case Keenum goes, kind of turns back to a pumpkin, and the Eagles just run ramshot, especially through the air. And I think it's really surprising that Doug Peterson completely befuddled Mike Zimmer's defense. And may I say to Mike McCarthy, he should have a long look at what the Eagles did in this game, because they got chunks. They were getting chunks of yardage, and Doug Peterson did things to Mike Zimmer's defense I have never seen. And I love it, and I hope that the Packers take a very long look and see what they can do with Aaron Rodgers next year, because Packers have struggled against them, and this could definitely turn the tide, maybe. I mean, you're not saying one game has exposed that Vikings defense, but they looked as overrated as I've seen. I mean, I'm not to say the Vikings are overrated, but you have to wonder how good they actually were and how much did they actually belong in this title game. For a Saints fan, it has to piss you off, because you look at it and you're like, this should have been us, damn it. We were the better team. We should have been playing here. We should have had the chance. And instead, it was an absolute ass kicking. And the Eagles defense stood tall once again. Jim Schwartz's crew did a hell of a job. They had their defensive line is as good as anyone. They have a premier defensive line, and that's where it starts, and they can cover up some of their errors in their secondary. Secondary is average. Secondary really isn't that good. But because they get so much pressure on the quarterback, Fletcher Cox is one of the best defensive tackles in the league. Chris Long was a free agent pickup, a one-year deal, Hey, Goody. Just sort of like, and he came, he's had a huge year. He's had a huge impact on the playoffs. He was arguably one of the players of this game. Derek Barnett, a young guy coming through. They just have guys that keep coming at the quarterback. And I said that was the reason I took the Eagles, because I thought the pressure would get to Case Keenum, and that is exactly what happened. Case Keenum couldn't handle it. They couldn't run the football. And guys like Stephon Diggs had a nice day, but Adam Thielen was a complete afterthought. He did absolutely nothing. And that was, got to give credit to that Eagles defense. You know, Thielen had 3 catches for 28 yards. Complete, you know, we don't know how hurt he was. We don't know what his night was, but Diggs and McKinnon were all they had, and that was about it. Foles has a rebirth of sorts. You know, 2013 version of Nick Foles appeared, and everybody had said he was being more comfortable and just let Nick be Nick, and the guy just swung it. We heard going into the game, like, hey, maybe his elbow is a real issue and he can't throw the ball downfield. He took that and wiped his ass with it. He was awesome. He would do flea flickers. They were taking shots after shots on this Vikings defense, and it was paying off because they were running these intricate routes, and the Vikings, being the aggressive team they were biting on everything, leading to big plays for Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith. I think Nelson Aguilar had a big moment. They toyed with the Vikings defense all game long, and Doug Peterson, Nick Foles deserve a ton of credit. And yes, and we'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. We'll obviously do a lot more as we get closer in 2 weeks. But yes, Nick Foles and the Eagles defense can beat the Patriots. And if you don't think they can, you're an idiot. And the fact that it's a 6-point spread is wild. And you want to keep doubting the Eagles. I love it. I love the idea. It's so Philadelphia about the underdogs and the dog masks. And like, I think they're creepy as hell, but it's sweet. It's such a brand. Like, it's such part of what Philly is and how Philly sort of acts. They act like the underdog. They're always the underdog. They've never really saw themselves as the favorite. I can't remember a scenario where Philly was a favorite in sports. It just isn't, that's not part of their makeup. So this is all perfectly Philly, and it's going to be a good Super Bowl. Trust me on that. And I really do believe this. And moving on to the AFC game, where it was looking like we might have had Jaguars, Eagles, and maybe what would have been known as the Asshole Bowl just by the fans. I mean, the fights would have been incredible. The videos that we would have got from that would have been amazing. But the Patriots did what the Patriots do, and they took advantage of the second half. I really think Doug Marrone's going to look back at that game and think that he coached scared. As someone who's watched their coach scared in a postseason game, it was clear to me that that's what Jacksonville did. Jacksonville sat on a lead. They were up 14-10 going into halftime, and Doug Marrone decided to take a knee with 55 seconds left. He had 2 timeouts, remember. He could have easily got down the field, and Blake Bortles was doing enough, and Nathaniel Hackett's play calling was frustrating the Patriots defense, that they could have easily got a field goal or got at least an attempt for Josh Lambeau. They ended up getting a field goal on their first drive out of the tunnel. And so if you would have doubled up on that, that's extra points. You know, I can't for the life of me understand why Marrone sat on the football in the AFC Championship game. I get it if it's a regular season game, go into it with a lead, but you have to take every advantage, every opportunity that's given to you. And the fact right there is, you know, they coach scared. There was also the talk from the Jaguars locker room about, well, we played more zone in the second half. We weren't going man-to-man. That's, again, a scared tactic. The old phrase, scared money doesn't make money. Scared coaching doesn't create victories. You don't win games coaching scared. And I think that's what Jacksonville did. I think Jacksonville was scared of what happened to him. And then when it happened, they're like, oh, man, we tried to prevent this from happening, and it still happened. What could we have done? Jacksonville needed to keep playing their game, and they didn't. And they let Tom Brady sneak back in, and that son of a bitch is going to his 8th Super Bowl in 15 years. It is absolutely incredible. And some people wonder why you like the Patriots. I like the Patriots. I have no problem with the Patriots. Fact of the matter is the Patriots just keep doing it. They're the machine. You saw the John Malkovich thing. That did awesome for us on SnowTap WI, by the way. Check that out if you haven't. It's on our page, SnowTap WI. It's a website, as you know. And they're the machine that keeps pounding and pounding and pounding. And these two Goliaths, Brady and Belichick, just keep doing it. And it's so awesome. And it's so great to see. And they took advantage of Jacksonville late in this game. Jacksonville just could not get off the floor, and they didn't take advantage of the Miles Jack fumble. They just, they were close, but Jacksonville will be back. Jacksonville's a very good team. They're not going to be like this one and done thing. It's Blake. I know that the whole idea now is, what do they do about quarterbacks? Do they pick up Blake Bortles' option? Do they go after a guy like Alex Smith? Do they look at somewhere else? Kirk Cousins, maybe? I mean, the Jaguars have a big decision on their hands at quarterback, and so do the Vikings in that, and I'm actually writing about that today. So look forward to that, because I think, and this is maybe a little spicy, but I think the Vikings' quarterback decision could decide how the NFC North looks for the next 5 years. And that might be a little bit of a ridiculous take, but just work with me here. I think it really does, and I know that Vikings fans probably aren't going to be thinking about that. They're just going to be thinking about how much they got their ass kicked. And, yeah, we have a good basketball team and a decent hockey team, so we can sort of look towards that and just try to lay low for 2 weeks and the Super Bowl stuff's going on. But, yeah, no, there's a big decision upcoming. So, yes, Eagles, Patriots, this will be the second time we've gotten the Super Bowl. This is a throwback from about, it was 2004. So this is now about, 14 years later. Not a bad Super Bowl. I don't think this is one that people are like, oh, I'm trying to think if you were like at the beginning of this, if you're like, okay, who are the two teams? I think NBC is fine with two public teams. There's a good angle with the underdogs. There's still that David versus Goliath thing that was teed up last week because of the whole dog masks and just embracing the underdog lifestyle against this Patriots team, who is the juggernaut, a young coach in Doug Peterson, aggressive. I think Philly has a legitimate shot at this game. I know that we're going to beat it down to death next week, and we're going to talk so much about it. And you have to wonder, and this is sort of, and again, I'm throwing out some spicy takes, but you have to wonder if some Minnesota businesses, hotels, restaurants are happy that there's two out-of-state teams in there, so they don't have just all be Minnesotans who don't know any better, or who know better, who know where are spots, what are ripoffs, things like that. So now you have a bunch of guys from Massachusetts and Pennsylvania who just have no idea. So they I think will make more money because of this. And so even though I'm sure the Minnesota thing hurts, they're at the end of the day, I think a lot of these businesses are smiling that that's not the Vikings. So I know the Vikings fans are going to wallow in pity for a while and same old Vikings. And yes, it is the same old Vikings. And I was told in a comment by my guy Jim that I complain too much about the Vikings and I'm whining. Here's the thing. I don't care. Vikings are – it's different between Packers and Vikings fans. It's been a battle for supremacy. When the Vikings lose, we're happy. When we lose, the Vikings fans are happy. They dance on our graves. We dance on our graves. I have no problem pissing all over them today and enjoying every fucking minute of the Eagles kicking their ass, because I am not sorry one bit. Okay, moving on to the Milwaukee Brewers. So all of a sudden, the hot stove was lit. On Sunday night, Jerry Krasnick of ESPN reported that their Brewers were possibly looking at an outfield deal. Barstool Hubs had reported that it might be for Jacoby Ellsbury, and some baseball blogs or some Brewer blogs didn't want to take him seriously because he worked for Barstool. That's a garbage look. That's just a trash thing to do. You got to take anything for consideration. He also said the rumor was pretty unsubstantiated. He just threw it out there. It wasn't like he said it was gospel. And there's been Barstool people who've broken baseball stories. So let's kind of break through that thing. That's kind of dumb. And then after the fact, there was a report from Yahoo Japan that Yu Darvish has been formally offered by the Milwaukee Brewers. So that is all that's going on right now. I mean, the outfield thing's interesting. If it is Jacoby Ellsbury, the Brewers would probably get a prospect back and would take on, I'm sure that there would be a bunch of that contract would be ate by the Yankees. I don't know if Jacoby Ellsbury makes a ton of sense. I think he's kind of washed at this point, but there's obviously, David's, I try not to discount what David Stern's doing and if he knows better. So there is that. So in Stern's, we trust as always. And you look at a guy like Darvish and what he could possibly add to this team. And, we talked about Otani and how Giannis made it seem like international players could have a fandom here in Milwaukee. And I'm sure that's being pitched to Darvish right now. So, hey, look, Giannis is the biggest superstar. He's from Greece, and he is a stud here in Milwaukee. You can be a stud too. Darvish kind of, he's about that life. And I think Darvish would have a clout to him. And unpacking what Darvish has done, I think a lot of fans are going to look at what happened in the postseason, that he really struggled there, and say, well, is it worth, you know, seeing what he did? Because he got banged up good in the World Series. He had a 21.60 ERA in two games started, only three innings pitched over those two games, 9 runs, 8 earned, 2 home runs given up, and did not strike out a batter. Now, in the NLCS, in the NLDS, he was very good. People will forget that because that's how Brewers fans work. They're fickle. They're just like Bucks fans. They're going to say, oh, well, he was so terrible. And that's the last memory you have in your head. But if you look at it, like, he's been very good. He has had a win above replacement, above 3 in every season that he's, every full season, he's had a war above 3, forgetting the 2015 year where he missed it with an elbow injury. He's been an all-star every year. He was Cy Young. He was second in Cy Young voting in 2013 when he struck out 277 batters. He was not an all-star in 2016. Excuse me. I'll correct that. But what I'm trying to say is Yu Darvish is a stud. He is a good pitcher. He is a guy that will fit in. He does give up a decent amount of home runs. That is a little concerning, being that you're at Miller Park, but the guy can kind of work around it. I trust that they can figure it out and work with him on how that does. He doesn't walk a lot of batters, which I think you have to like. And he is that ace that the Brewers haven't had in years. It will be the first ace the team has in Greinke. And you could make the argument that if Jake Arrieta isn't willing to do a 3-year deal, and Darvish, I'd rather have Darvish for 5 than Arrieta for 3, or Arrieta for 4. Let's just put it that way. So we'll see. We'll see what kind of impact, what that could happen, and where the Brewers, you know, maybe looking as Darvish to be the ace of the future for this team. And Jimmy Nelson, I guess, is ahead of schedule. So if you have a frontline rotation of Darvish and Nelson, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good start. And then you have a lot of guys that are, you know, Chase Anderson's just as good. Don't sleep on Chase Anderson. And the Brewers have the makings of looking like a team that can compete for the pennant. And we talked about it last week with Pittsburgh fire sailing their team and Cincinnati still in rebuilding, that the NL Central is ripe for the picking. And I think Stearns knows that. And I think the Darvish thing and them sniffing around with outfielders potential. And apparently they've been looking to move Domingo Santana since winter. So that's been a thing. And Domingo is apparently the odd guy out, which I don't know if I agree with. And we can talk about that at another time. But, you know, he could be one of those things where Stearns is selling high and sees that there are other guys ready. And he knows that Domingo has value at this juncture, and he can provide it for teams. And there is some, I think, legit concerns about his all-around game and whether his body type's going to fit an outfielder for years. His defense is lackadaisical at best. It doesn't seem like it's getting better. He has a decent arm, but that's about it. And he uses his arm. He does not field the ball very well at all. He does not play a good right field. You could almost make the argument that he belongs in more of a DH first base role. And who knows? I know that why would you limit that arm at first base, but he's awful. He's not a good defender. And he makes way too many errors, bad reads on balls. And I think that's playing a lot into this and saying it's only going to get worse as he gets older. It hasn't really shown signs of improvement. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with all of that. We'll keep an eye on it. Maybe we'll have some stuff for the Daily Tap tomorrow. I'm sure we'll talk Bucks-Suns. Once again, no Giannis in that game. We'll see if the Bucks can avoid being back to 500. And as they're kind of at the halfway point, you know, maybe look at some of the stuff going on there. Tapping the Keg will tape Tuesday night again, so look for that as well. And yeah, we'll talk and enjoy the day of the Viking sorrow. And hopefully we can get a super cut of all the disappointed Paul Allen, because I need that injected into my veins. Because it is a sweet day to be a Packer fan, because it just means it's another year where the Vikings do not have a Super Bowl victory. All right, Tappers, take care. Have a good Monday. See you.